Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.
Blake, what's your favorite spot in all of Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Is it too weird to say your brother's hot tub?
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech director out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, a man who would spend 24 hours a day in a hot tub if I had one. And I'm here with my boss, a man who would not like me to spend all my working hours in a hot tub, Toby Walters.
In the show notes, it says, I'm here with my boss who puts the hot in hot tub.
Yeah, I made an ad-lib change right there.
Was that a little too racy for, you know, an early morning podcast recording?
I just didn't want people to know of my love for you this early on in the day.
Is it a secret?
You know, sometimes.
I mean, apparently it's not a secret for your love for my brother and his hot tub.
Yeah, you know, between the Walters men, don't make me pick. I mean, Toby, my boss, the other Walters guy with the hot tub. Oh, it's a tough one.
And I don't have a hot tub, but my brother does.
That's true. But you put the hot in his hot tub.
Yes.
So that's what made it, you know, bubbly, I'm assuming. I doubt there's anything else heating it.
No, it's just me. I'm like a lava rock.
Okay, what?
So I was just in the Dallas-Fort Worth area visiting my family. So all my family lives out there. We're all from California, but they decided, hey, Dallas sounds good to relocate to and move to.
I'm starting to think California only exists to generate people to then leave the state. Nobody stays.
It seems to be the case, although a lot of people moved to California, or at least when I was younger.
That's true, because then they're like, well, I'm going to make it in acting. So if you're born there, you leave. And if you're not born there, you think it's awesome.
Yeah. So spent 5 days in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I thought to myself, well, you know what is in, what do you think there's a lot of in Dallas-Fort Worth?
Evil cowboy fans.
There certainly
churches.
Is that. But churches, I mean, Dallas-Fort Worth is like the mecca for mega churches. That and Atlanta seems to be the two cities that just have like a mega church on every corner. So I thought like, hey, I'm going to be in town. Let's see if I can meet with some of our friends. So I planned to meet with two churches, but ended up meeting with three. So first I went to our friends at Gateway Church in Southlake and visited them at their central warehouse. Blake, their warehouse probably has more gear in it than we do.
Well, once you said their central warehouse, I was like, oh my gosh, they need a name for it because they've got multiple ones. Like, that's a lot of gear.
So some of these churches that are doing like really amazing things and are building campuses, they'll have a central warehouse where they essentially source the gear out to their campuses. And so this one is for that. Like they have a broadcast campus, which is sort of their central campus, but then this, you know, warehouse of gear feeds all their other campuses as well. Saw the same thing at Church of the Highlands.
That's pretty genius. Did you pick up any tips for us on having a better warehouse ourselves from those churches?
More space?
Yes.
I mean, like 90,000 square feet would be helpful.
We just need God to take one of our ribs and create another warehouse for us in the way that he created Eve, because we just need more space.
I think I would literally donate a rib to get a bigger warehouse at this
point. I
think
everyone at Church Gear would.
So essentially, like on my way to Gateway, we also got an email from Watermark Church. Watermark's just down the road, and they said, hey, we got gear, and we got an LED wall coming, and we have nowhere to put the LED wall while we wait for installation. We got to get this gear out. And I said, well, fancy that. I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so I drove over, and I took my dad, because, you know, poor dad needs something to do.
Well, as we established, the Walters men have many talents, so anytime you can leverage one, you better take them.
Many. And my mom is always trying to keep my dad busy, because otherwise he bothers her.
Mm. You know, he must bother her by being the nicest man I've ever met.
Stop sucking up to my dad.
I like your dad a lot.
Fine. So I go to Watermark, and the first thing that struck me is the tech director, Hudson, said, I'll meet you in the coffee shop. And I said, okay. Like, I assume most churches, like large churches, have a coffee bar. But this had like at least 50 people in it, just like hanging out, working. Like it was busier than any Starbucks, and it was huge and awesome.
No, that's great though, actually. I mean, because on a real note, I've always said churches have got so much space. You could be, you know, the community center for your area. So I love hearing them do that. That's great.
And this was a Thursday afternoon. And so I asked Hudson, like, is this normal? And he said, oh yeah, like this is one of the most popular coffee shops in town. And I thought it was so cool that like a church coffee shop's just open all week. And they also had, and you would appreciate this, Blake, they had this incredible three-story like children's play area.
Oh, nice.
Like all these like rope bridges and climbing things. And it's just open to the community.
See, this is, everybody, this is how you do it. This is great. I mean, obviously all churches are not of this size, but I love this.
And it doesn't feel like a church. It kind of feels like you're at the Google campus. Like their whole intention was to create a space that, you know, felt more like a corporate setting, like, you know, you feel like you're going into the Google Retreat Center. And then I walked into the worship center as well. And it was so cool because it's like it's created not to look like a church. Fits 4,200 people. So it's massive, but it's all these like cool wood tones and, you know, kind of like industrial architecture feel. So
oh, yeah.
It's really cool to see.
As a millennial, you know, give me some industrialness combined with a little bit of wood tones and you got me. I'm sold.
Yes. And so third, I decided, well, let's connect with our friends over at Prestonwood Baptist. And so I've been on the campus of Prestonwood. So like 10 years ago, I bought a Fender Twin Reverb from some guy at Prestonwood. Like
it freaks
he was one
me
of the worship
how,
guys.
How you remember that?
Well, who would ever forget a Fender Twin Reverb?
Me in 3 hours.
Yeah. So I had been on campus. I think I met the worship guy like in the parking lot. He had it in his trunk and he's like, yeah, just meet me there. I'll, you know, I've done so many parking lot deals
Toby's
in my
done
life.
So many drug deals. I mean, so many gear deals out of trunks.
I mean, gear addiction syndrome, as we've seen, is a real thing. So this was the first time I actually walked inside of Prestonwood. And if Watermark was impressive, oh my goodness. So I walk into the...
So it was impressive wood?
Impressive wood. There you go. Wow. That was a painfully bad
practicing
joke.
My dad jokes.
Yeah. I sure hope Brian edits that one out because that was brutal. Okay, we'll try again here. So I go inside Prestonwood and my oh my, is it impressive wood. Oh, dang it, I did it too.
Did you just, I just inceptioned you. That was great.
So their lobby is, it's like three stories tall. It's massive. And then I met with their lead audio tech, Mike Smith. And Mike has quite the story past as well. And he walks me into the worship center and... The first thing I thought was like, I think this is bigger than Willow Creek.
No way. Also, Mike is a great name for the audio guy.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So like I'm looking and it's kind of like a, just like Willow Creek has two balconies.
Which
like,
is just stupendous.
It's
such
crazy.
A cool site.
Fits 6,700 people. So Prestonwood kind of has two balconies. It's like the floor just keeps going backwards, like up stadium seating.
Well, you know and what so, that is, Toby.
Why?
Everything's bigger in Texas.
That I guarantee you that's true. So it like, it goes just up, up, up. It almost feels like, you know, it eventually is a balcony section. And then above that is another balcony section. And I asked Mike, how many people does this seat? 7,200.
That's a lot of souls right there.
That is a lot. And maybe our guest today will talk about their Christmas programs, but the amount of people that they seat in like a 2 week period is like 70,000 people that they host for these Christmas productions.
So do you think Prestonwood Baptist has got a plaque in heaven for most souls saved in Texas?
It's quite possible. There is a high level of competition for souls saved in Texas.
That's true. There's a lot of souls to save.
And also a lot of like well-known soul savers.
Well, it's also hard though, because nobody, you know, so few people in Texas have a soul because they're Cowboys fans. You know, those Cowboys fans.
You are really digging your own grave. You know, I was hanging out with Mike. And I was like, Mike, please be on our podcast. Like you have such a like storied career in the audio industry. And he's like, you know what? I just can't do it. I'm too cool. But you know who's not too cool is another one of our guys.
Yes. Introducing the director of media at Prestonwood Baptist Church, our new best friend, Brian Bailey. Brian Bailey, welcome to the show, my friend.
It's good to be here. And I'm happy to be not cool enough to be on this podcast.
And I'm definitely not using sarcastic, you know, false humor to, like, Mike definitely said, you know, he's way too cool for our podcast, but you're not. So
I believe that. Mm-hmm. He has a fairly large ego, but mm-hmm. you know,
I get it.
See, Brian, though, showed up with a really great mic. So I have to assume that he is cooler than Mike.
That's true.
Did Mike even have a mic?
Yeah, does Mike walk around with like a mic in his back pocket in case he needs to?
Yeah, he has access to a lot of microphones, and his Instagram handle is the Mike Smith, spelled MIC.
Love it.
He's very punny. He's full blown audio guy.
All right, Brian.
Full blown.
So as long as he's not blowing the speakers. All right, so I'm gonna list out your truths, and one of them is a lie. Once we've locked it in, we'll let you know, and you can let us know how right I am and how wrong Toby was on his guess.
And Mike did also tell us that Brian's a liar, so this works out really well for us.
Oh, yes. All right. That's Brian, fair. Here are your truths and a lie. Number one, earned a degree in church music intending to be a worship leader.
I did the exact same thing.
Well, you know what's funny is he's kind of the amalgamation of the two of us, the further this goes on. Started Ooh. His technical career in, oh my gosh, theatrical lighting.
Use your words.
I don't know why that threw me. Number three, holds a county record in Arkansas for largest brown trout caught on a fly. I need this to be
that's
real.
A whole conversation right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number four, has led media teams at Cross Church, Northwest Arkansas, First Baptist Dallas, and Prestonwood Church.
Well, we know one of those is true because I was at Prestonwood.
This
so.
Would be a really good lie for you if that you just changed
Do
one
you,
of
though,
the three.
Because I wasn't actually there.
That is true. You just emailed
so
with
keep
the
that
handle.
In mind.
So, and maybe you quit yesterday. I don't know.
I mean, it is the great reshuffle or resignation. Real talk, I would love for someone, like if his buddy Mike had told him, recommended him, and he actually didn't even work there, that would be
hysterical.
That'd be funny.
Or if we just had Mike all of a sudden come on the show and fire you.
Or
I don't know if he that has be, that power, but
yeah, that would be amazing for a couple of reasons. Yeah. But yeah,
I love it. Number five, has a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. I need this to be false because I have a first degree, and that means you would outrank me, and that'd hurt my feelings.
I've seen you do Taekwondo, so I am not skeptical that he could outrank you.
I literally just joined a kickboxing gym last week. And have been waiting to tell Toby live on the podcast to get his real reaction.
With Billy Banks?
Yes. Number six, and finally, recently completed a master's of communications degree. Again, minored in communication. So I'm like, Brian is my future self.
I feel like if the rest of his things are true, that the university should have just given him one of those like honorary masters in communications.
Oh, totally. He's definitely accomplished enough, which that's got to be the goal in life, is to be so accomplished they just start handing you doctorates. It's quite crazy that they do that.
That sounds good.
It does to me too. Didn't
it would be a whole lot cheaper.
Oh yes.
Didn't Taylor Swift recently get one?
She did, however, and I was thinking of that joke too, but I remember reading about it, and I think she might have actually done some coursework. I don't know if they just gave it to her. I feel like there was something in there about she was
okay. So if I'd like do some coursework.
Well, Toby, you did do some coursework. You did, but you didn't finish your piano exam, so
shut up. Okay. Okay.
All right.
We got to figure out Brian's lie.
Brian, do you want to give me any hints so I can beat Toby on this?
You can't give hints.
Okay. You know what? I'm not going to waffle. I think he's hiding the lie in those three churches. No, wait. Actually, I'm going to change because he actually did have a lot of churches on his resume. So I'm going to say it's the second degree black belt. Watch him end up being first or third degree.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Taekwondo thing as well.
Oh,
just because I want to have this discussion.
All right.
So,
interesting.
Let's do a flip kick into this. Did we get it right?
Well, sadly, you did not.
Ah.
You did not. That's actually true.
When did you get your black belt, your second degree?
I got my second degree actually just a few months ago. Was supposed to get it during COVID, test during COVID, but obviously that didn't work out. So finally got that thing a few months ago and feels nice. It's
and
good.
Brian, are you a fan of The Office?
I am.
So did you do your like second degree black belt ceremony like Dwight, where you came into your office with your sensei and, you know, did the whole demonstration?
You know, after seeing how that went on The Office, I decided that wasn't exactly the image that I wanted to portray to everybody here at Prestonwood, which is a place where I do work, by the way.
We confirmed that part. It didn't stop Blake, though, from coming into the office and doing his taekwondo demonstration, because he is nice. The real life embodiment of Dwight.
That's how I prepare for these podcasts. You know, I gotta kick some things to kind of get the blood flowing.
I mean, if you've got that sort of, you know, talent and ability, I think it's fair just to show that off to everybody. You know, for me, I keep it under wraps as much as possible.
That's why I do show tunes every morning when I get to the office.
Mm-hmm. And you should see the outfits he wears. Mm-hmm. See, Brian, you should show it off at the work, because then, you know, if someone disagrees with you about a technical thing or a budget increase, you can be like, hey,
that's true.
Don't make me pop out the skills.
Mike tries to fire you. You throat kick him. Is that a thing?
It could be.
Sure.
It absolutely could be.
Okay. Well, then what is your lie?
Sadly, I've caught a lot of brown trout, but I've not ever caught very many brown trout. So I do not hold a record in Arkansas or any other state, for that matter, for largest fish of any kind.
I kind of feel dumb that we didn't get that now, because looking at the lies or his truths, they do run a consistent theme. That's like a random wilderness outdoorsy kind of thing.
Well, the taekwondo is also kind of random.
That's true. Yeah. Between the two of them, those were probably the biggest outliers.
Now, I've never caught any. I don't even know what a brown trout is, other than a trout that's brown, I guess.
That is the right answer.
That's fair. Yeah.
I went fishing once in my life when I was a kid in Japan on a family vacation. I know, this is a super random story. And our host took us ocean fishing, and they, you know, gave me a reel and taught me how to do it. And I was like, okay. I was like 9 years old. So I cast out, and then I feel the tug. And so they're helping me pull it in. I caught two fish on one hook.
I cannot believe I've never heard this.
I've ever been fishing, I caught two fish on one hook.
In Japan.
In Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've got me there. So.
I know. I should have an honorary degree.
Toby, that needs
in fishing.
Japanese ocean fishing.
Yes.
That needs to be your Instagram bio right after we're done recording.
John. Also a very expensive degree to obtain.
And what's Instagram again?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I have a job. Okay, so you recently got your degree in your master's in communications and taekwondo. So you chose the COVID route of, well, I'm just going to get all this education stuff knocked out. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, the communications thing was interesting. I've always wanted to get a master's degree, and have never had a really strong reason to do it necessarily. But originally, I always thought I would get my master's, like get an MFA or something in lighting design. But I'm kind of to the point now where I'm not exactly a lighting designer anymore. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Communications was an area, because I was a music major. Communications is an area where I haven't had a whole lot of formal training, and kind of looking on the horizon, what God may have for me felt like, you know, going ahead and getting some training in these things that I have opinions on, but I don't have a whole lot of backing for why I have the opinions that I have. It was a huge help, and did that at DBU, Dallas Baptist University, and they have a great communications and leadership program. So it was very cool to take some organizational leadership classes and things like that. And it's already been a huge help to me.
Well, Brian, having opinions on things I have no backing on is basically my whole MO
you
in life.
Beat me to it.
I could see you gearing up for it.
And Brian, do you have siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister.
Does she have a master's?
She does not.
Does anybody else in your family have a master's?
Actually, nobody in my immediate family has a master's.
Okay, so you're like the opposite of me. So the only one who doesn't have at least a master's is my mom. Otherwise, my dad has a master's, my brother has a PhD, my sister has a PhD, and then my wife has a master's. Everybody has, and I have nothing.
But do any of them have a podcast?
I have a Blake.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's a big win.
Tech, yeah.
So, Brian, speaking of having a Blake, a young upstart, you know, whippersnapper.
I hope not.
We see a lot of young upstart whippersnappers in our, like, you know, day-to-day of buying gear.
Are people still saying whippersnappers?
I don't know. It is kind of funny to say that as, like, a young thing. Anyways, we come across a lot of these, whatever we're calling them, young people now, the youths.
So youths.
Yes, we come across the youths
these guys that are in their mid 20s, like a lot of them. And, you know, suddenly they're like, they end up leaving tech within 10 years to find a more lucrative career. So how did you parlay, you know, your different church opportunities into a situation where you could support a family via a church tech job? And I hope it's not weird for us to bring up, you know, pay and church tech positions. That's, we see the whole gamut.
That's a reality. I think it's important to be able to talk about it. And, you know, it's, you know, for me, I mean, I will preface all of it with, you know, your Sunday school answer of none of it happens without God's blessing. And I think as I look back on what I did starting in my early 20s, scares me to death. Like I should have been frightened out of my mind, but I wasn't. I look back on it and realize how much God just protected me from a lot of things. But you know, one of the things that I was willing to do, and this is a generational thing, and you know, I was born in 79, so I'm on that like verge of, yeah. So we're in that weird, you know, crack.
Ex-millennial.
I could technically be called a millennial, or I could technically be called a, what is it? Generation X. I don't even know what I am. That's how messed up we are at 43 years old.
Well, no one talks about Gen X. Like no one. It's boomers versus millennials. That's it. You never hear Gen
X. I know.
Yeah.
I know. And us middle people. And the weird thing about it is like, for me anyway, I feel both tugs. You know, I grew up with boomer parents. So I have a lot of this work ethic thing built into me. And when I say work ethic, I mean, of that particular type of, you just work your butt off and that's how you're going to make your way in life and nothing's handed to you and blah, blah, blah. And then I've got the other tug of, yeah, but it should be the other way too. And so I've always had this weird thing, but because I grew up that way, I recognized very early on, okay, I need to start somewhere and I'm going to work my way up through that as I go. I was blessed to be able to move fairly quickly through that. You know, I started off basically just in lighting, and within just a few years that expanded to a lot of areas. But I feel like for me, it's because I was willing to be humble enough to admit the things that I don't know, and willing to sit under people to learn from them. Even if maybe I didn't agree with everything they were doing, I knew that their experience was going to help me in the long run. And so I think God honored that for me, but it just, you know, it kind of ramped me up fairly quickly through the process. Even though, you know, my transition from Prestonwood the first time to Cross Church was kind of a giant leap from a lighting director to a director of media, which covered everything, you know, I wasn't qualified for that job. And I told them that ahead of time, but they seemed fine with it for some reason. So I went ahead and took it and learned a lot and got a lot of on the job training through that. But I would say one of the really important things for me that I didn't recognize I was doing at the time, I just kind of did it, is number one, networking. And number two, finding people who know more than you do and getting them to teach you things. And that's something that you have to do actively, because they're not going to come find you. I'm the same way. With what you guys were saying, I've been finding a lot of these younger guys that are in tech, mainly because of either things that I'm teaching at or just some networking that I've got. And it's so easy for these guys just to end up on an island, because this is how most tech guys start, right? Most tech guys get their start because they're running sound, or they're doing something like that, and somebody at the church says, hey, you're great at that. Wouldn't you love to have a job doing this full time and you would always get to do tech? And they're like, well, yeah, that would be awesome. I could get paid for this. And they take it and they have no idea what the job actually entails. And pretty much none of us are actually prepared for the people side of things and the organizational side of things and everything else that goes with it. And it doesn't take long when you compound on that, the fact that churches will suck their tech people dry. It doesn't take long before you're out. You know, you could be making a lot more money doing all kinds of other things. So why am I going to continue submitting myself to this?
I love what you're talking about as far as like finding somebody, you know, it doesn't have to even be older, but somebody that's further down the road that you want to go and ask them, how do I get there? So I remember, Blake, we were interviewing Todd Elliott with Philo, and it's like almost Philo came about because Todd was like, I don't know who to ask. Like, I need to build a community with these people. But now there is this huge community of tech people. Like, there's MXU and Churchfront, where all these people are coming together and having these conversations. So for you, Brian, who, like, you are very far down that road where a lot of these young people are looking and seeing, like, what you're doing.
Did you just
thinking,
call Brian old?
No. Although he is 43, okay. And as of the recording of this podcast, I'm still 42.
Oh,
so
congratulations.
I know. Thank you.
It's coming.
So
we hope so.
How do the young people who, you know, are at your church, either like they're started to volunteer or they haven't yet, like, how do they approach you to say, like, ooh, I want to be doing what you're doing? Like, what's step one? Like, what's your advice that you then hand down to them?
Yeah, I've actually had several people do that. And I've even got some people that are on my team that have said, hey, at some point I'd like to be doing what you're doing. And first I try and warn them and make sure they understand what it is that I actually do. But I really go back to what I was saying, which is, okay, number one, put yourself in a seat of understanding that you don't know, not only do you not know everything, you probably don't know very much. And if you will at least believe that that's true, then that's a good starting point to understand I need to pull from as many people and resources as possible. The other thing that I've really tried to put into younger tech folks' minds is, look, the technology is actually the easy part because we're all in this because we love tech. So none of us have a problem researching and playing with things and going to trainings and all that sort of stuff. The tech part is just going to happen and needs to be, like, you need to be good at what you do. So if you're an audio guy, you need to be a really good audio guy. If you're somebody who does lighting, you need to try and be the best lighting person that you can. That's just something that's fairly normal. The thing that a lot of people don't think about is the leadership aspect of things. And so I've got a fairly lengthy list of books that if somebody comes to me and is legitimately saying, hey, I want to know how to do this, I say, here, take this list and just start reading and don't stop reading. I was not a reader.
What are some of
honestly,
these books,
Brian? Well, this is what Toby did to me the day I took the job at Church Gear. He gave me a stack of books. I put them on my bookshelf and I've been going through them with the hack of that is the library app. Download your local library app. You get audiobooks for free. Anyways, ooh, so yeah, what are some of those books, Brian?
One of the ones that I start with is Turn the Ship Around, L. David Marquette. And it's a fantastic book. He was a submarine captain, lieutenant. Yeah, but he was in charge of nuclear submarines. And it's an amazing story of how he took a submarine that ranked the lowest in the entire fleet and changed it to rank the highest in the fleet. And it's all about the leader mentality of leadership. So instead of a top-down leadership mentality, it is how do you empower everybody on your team, every single person at every level to be a leader in some way. And as your team grows in the church world, that becomes more and more important. For people on smaller teams that don't necessarily have that sort of those sort of resources that, you know, they may only just be them and they've got some volunteers or whatever. I also like for them to read How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, which we just got to hear that fantastic author at Philo. And that's a great book for just dealing with the frustrations that you deal with when you're kind of in the middle and you've got maybe two or three bosses, but you've also got volunteers under you and other people on the church team that you work with. And you don't know how in the world am I supposed to do this when I think that they're thinking about this wrong and I've got a better idea or whatever it may be. It's a really helpful book for people in our situation.
So what's generally step two? If step one is like start with these books and step two is you're going to start wrapping cables or you're going to, you know, sweep the floor, do you sort of start them on the ground level? Does it depend on the person?
It depends on the person. I mean, I've got one guy that I'm thinking of that is like he's in his early 20s, like really early. I think he's 21 or 22. And he what I tried to explain to him is you already have more technical experience at your age than I did even 10 years beyond you. Like, because of the way things are now, I mean, for crying out loud, there's, you know, college degrees now for people who want to do church media that didn't exist when I was in college. So these younger people are getting way more hands-on experience with technical gear than we could have ever done, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So they already have, like, this guy already has the technical knowledge. So it's like, you just keep doing what you're doing, and that it's the leadership capabilities that are going to really set you apart. It's the, another big thing is developing self-awareness. Cause I don't know if you guys know this, but tech people are an interesting group of people, and tend to, not have a whole lot of self-awareness about how others perceive them, how they are affecting others. And it was a problem that I had for a long time. I tend to be pretty brash and, well, maybe not brash, but certainly confrontational, right? I have no problem stepping up and letting somebody know that I don't necessarily agree with what they're saying, or this may be the wrong way to go. And it took me a long time to realize that my approach to that maybe wasn't the most helpful way to do that. So finding courses to take on developing your personal awareness of how you're behaving, how other people perceive you, is a huge help.
So I want to kind of build on that, but I want to switch gears a little bit. You had talked about like how people get frustrated. They see like, well, I could be doing that better, but learning how to lead well. So I think, you know, what we're seeing a lot is people get frustrated and then they don't lead, they leave.
Yeah.
And so talk to us about some of the right reasons to leave a church for another ministry opportunity and perhaps some of the wrong reasons.
Well, it's interesting because I've had the opportunity to leave places that I've been several times. And obviously I've done that several times. And it's always a scary thing for me because my biggest fear personally is that I would make a decision based off of something that's in my head and my logic, but is not what God wanted me to do. And so really when I get into those times, it's like whatever my spiritual relationship with God has been, when those times come, it's like, I just take that deeper, deeper, deeper. And I want to make sure that I'm hearing what God has to say to me. And I'm not just basing this on, well, this is a better salary and I like where this location is better, and I like this person that I'd be working with better. There's so many seemingly good reasons to move to a different situation that really don't matter if that's not what God wants you to do. And really in a couple of different instances that I won't name specifically, I reached a point at that church where I realized, okay, so I'm definitely not going to be here for much longer, but I don't know how long that is. I just know that the situation that's come about is one that I'm not really built for, or this doesn't fit me, or this, I don't feel comfortable with this, and this is not going to last much longer. But God did not release me from that in one instance, for about a year. And so I spent a year at a place that I knew pretty well I wasn't going to stay at much longer. I wasn't happy with the way things were going. I wasn't comfortable with some things, but I had to make sure that I was still doing my job well, that I would finish well one way or another. And I had to wait for the right opportunity that God was going to bring me. You know, during that time, I had a couple of different interviews. Any of those I could have taken, and, you know, they were all good opportunities. But figuring out what it is that God had next for me, that's really the scary thing for me in those instances, is knowing that something needs to change, but being able to wait on God and have the faith to understand, okay, here, I'm going to put this in front of you. And usually it is something that's like, oh yeah, this makes sense.
So Brian, you started at Prestonwood and then you ended up back there. So we're assuming you must have left pretty well to end up back at where you started. So, I mean, how do you handle that really hard conversation of telling your pastor you're leaving?
How did you end up back there? Like, that's quite awesome that you were able to leave so well. You ended up back there.
Well, really, the key is just staying gone long enough that most of the people have left and they don't remember you. So then when you come back, most of the HR records are too old for that. Because it was like 15 analog. Years for me. Yeah. Yeah.
Or did you
the
break
other
in,
option is
did you break into the HR offices and remove the file? And it's
I mean, that's another way to do it. It's a lot more complicated. I just waited it out and it worked out fine.
Nice. Are you essentially like, all right, I can use my communications skills here and use persuasion, or you can use my second degree black belt and just go by force? You know, that's kind of your decision weighing mechanism.
We also have a pond at the church, so I could use my fishing skills. But that tends to be less impressive to HR or anybody else.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you could drown people there. Okay. But I mean, in all seriousness, though, I mean, how did you end up? So you left. How many years was in between that? How'd you end up back?
Yeah. So I left in 2006 and came back in 2017. In all seriousness, most of the same people were still here. You know, Prestonwood has some fantastic longevity on staff. And, you know, for me, it's just a matter of, if you really want to boil it down, it comes down to good communication. Again, you have to keep an attitude of humility. Like I keep coming back to that a lot in themes when I'm talking with other, you know, guys who do what we do. Because sadly, there is a lot of lack of humility for people who do tech. We've got a lot of power at our fingertips, and it's easy to feel a lot of strength in that. And we tend to be very logical and very pragmatic. And the reality is we work with worship leaders and pastors who are not logical and not pragmatic. And there's always a lot of rub against it. I didn't know if y'all knew that, but a lot of worship leaders are not logical.
No, my best friend is a worship leader. So
I used to be a worship leader.
Yeah. No, it's true. You can go find all their Instagram accounts and see what I'm talking about.
Oh my gosh, Brian, but with the fire. I love it. Oh my gosh.
It's just truth. And that's the problem. So like it's easy for us to speak truth like that, and it can get us in really big trouble. And so for me, when I realized, and this is true for every time I left somewhere, I feel like I could go back to anywhere that I've left. You'd have to ask them, but I feel like that's possible, because you have to be able to, with humility, go in and be able to say, you know what, God is doing something in my life. And, there's times where I've said, I got this other opportunity and God has made it clear through this, and this, that this is something I'm supposed to do. And there's other times we have to go and say, I feel like God's doing something and I'm not totally sure what it is, but I'm not sure if it's something that can happen here at this place. And I love it when people do that for me, because I can talk with them and say, no, actually what you're talking about, I think we can do that here. I don't think you have to leave to be able to accomplish what God is, working on you in. Other times I have to say, yeah, that's awesome for you. It's not something that can happen here. So let's find a way to help you finish well. And I've got people I can contact maybe that would be good for you. I've got somebody who's doing that right now on my team. She just gave me her 2 weeks notice on Monday, and it makes a lot of sense. But we were also talking about that before she gave me her 2 weeks notice. So it's all about, number one, making sure that you know what God's calling is on your life so that you're not just randomly trying to get out of something. And number two, communicating really well with the people that you work for and with about the transition that's going to happen.
So you said something that I totally recognize and echo with, that tech people are very pragmatic, very practical. Like they see things in black and white. And so for a tech person, it can be very easy to just simply do the math and then go to a very creative, emotional leader and say, look, I did the math, here's the result. And the creative, emotional leaders, like, they don't receive that super well because they see the world very differently. So do you have some advice for pragmatic, practical people to then have hard conversations with creative, emotional people where that translation works well?
Yeah, I do. And it's hard advice for me to follow as well. People who are on the creative spectrum, more creative, who are more emotional and those sort of things, they need relationships. They are relational people. Tech people as a whole are not relational people. We're super low maintenance. We'd prefer not to talk whenever possible. We would just assume be hanging out watching, you know, Star Wars, and we're good. That's all we need. Most of the time, the worship leaders that we work with, and also our creative team, by the way, if you're working with a lot of video creatives and things like that, those people need a relational aspect to things. So I've got certain people on our worship team that I know if I'm going to have an hour long meeting with that person, the first 15 to 20 minutes of that meeting are going to have absolutely nothing to do with what we're supposed to be talking about. Does that drive me insane? Yes. But have I learned the value of taking a breath and understanding this is valuable because it develops a relationship with this person? Yes. That is something that is so vital in our relationships with the worship leaders that we work with, is we have to have a relationship there. So I can't just, you know, go into their office cold and say, all right, here's the deal. Here's the way I see it. Here's an Excel spreadsheet that proves it. And this is the right thing to do. It's simply not going to work well. In the same way that I have ways that I operate, that it would help if people would understand, if I just bust in and say, here's what I'm going to do, Brian's not going to respond very well to that. Or he's going to say, all right, go away and give me 2 days to process that and we'll figure out what to do. So we have to be able to develop those relationships so that when we have those conversations, it's coming from a place of connection and not just the black and white cold like we're talking about.
So was that a big mental shift for you earlier on in your career of like, all right, the time with people, making relationships, having these interpersonal moments that feel like I'm not hitting the topic I was trying to get to, but are building this relationship. Was that a big mental shift of like telling yourself, yeah, it doesn't feel this way, but that is really valuable time?
It comes back to what I was talking about earlier with self-awareness. You know, it took me a long time to realize, oh, this is how my brain works. And the way that my brain works is not how everybody else's brain should work. You know, that was a big hurdle for me. And then understanding, because other people think differently than I do, I have to figure out where's the middle ground. Chances are, I'm going to be more self-aware about these things than other people are, just in general, which means I'm probably going to end up sacrificing more to make a relationship work in the workplace than the other person is. Does that make sense? That's kind of the price of doing the work that we've been talking about, of learning about yourself, learning how leadership works. It typically means that you're going to do more work than other people are going to do to make that function. But it doesn't mean that that's, you know, I mean, that's not for nothing. There's a lot to be gained from that. And the longer you work with people, the more you bring that gap closer together.
I feel like there's so many translations or,
parallels.
That's the word I'm looking for. Good job, Blake. It's like almost like international business. So if you want to do business with a person in X country, you need to realize they're like cultural translators. So if you sit down to coffee or tea with this certain cultural person, you need to realize, like, is the first 45 minutes of this hour meeting, is this supposed to be small talk about our family and building the relationship? Mm-hmm. Because if I launch into my pitch, they're immediately going to be turned off. It's like learning how a different culture, and very honestly, tech people and creative worship people are two different cultures. And to look at it that way of like, I'm never going to gain much ground with this different culture unless I learn how to relate and communicate to them and with them.
It's super important. You know, on the media team, and we have an unusually large team for a media team. But one of the things that we have to do, because even within the media team, we're not all the same, right? So we all come from a very different mental space a lot of times. So we use the DISC profile on our team. And so anybody new who joins the team, they do the DISC assessment. And we do the Dave Ramsey version, which has some really cool outputs on it, which I like. But once a year, once every 2 years, we'll do a little, you know, full day retreat with the team. And in addition to, you know, doing some fun stuff and doing some target practice and eating and things like that, we'll spend a bunch of time going through each person on the team's disc profile so that everybody can recognize, oh, that's why this person reacts the way they do whenever I come at them with this. Or now I know, all right, if I'm going into Brian's office, I should probably remember that he's really high D and really high C. So I should come in with, you know, a prepared bullet list of things and not spend an hour prepping him, prefacing whatever the story is that I'm going to tell. By the way, this does not apply to your marriage relationships. My wife can preface as much as she wants, and I will love her so much for it.
But she's prettier than any of the members on your media team.
She absolutely is. Yes. And there are other things that come along with that. So we also have our disc profile results printed out and on our office doors or cubicles or whatever, so that whenever you approach somebody's workspace, you can be quickly reminded, oh yeah, this person's really high I, so maybe I should ask them how their family is before I go into this thing that I'm asking.
I have heard about companies that have like personality traits under the title or the name of the person, like in their office. I've always said that's pretty genius. We do a couple things. We do print assessments
and
strength finders. We should put those somewhere publicly, even though we've all got it. It's on a cold Google Doc, you know, in the middle of the internet. That's really smart, putting that on the doors.
You know what else is on people's doors?
Oh no, what?
Job titles.
Oh, LOL. Well, we love job titles. Actually, we really love job titles because we change them so often because they're so, you know, fun time to be creative. We know, Brian, what a tech director is, or at least we'd like to think we do at this point.
We assume that all people in church tech are called tech directors.
That's ignorance
is what it's called.
Well, it makes for an easy Instagram strategy when it's just #church tech. But at the end of the day, we know that that's, you know, more of a broad term. And, you know, someone at a church of your size, job titles can get kind of confusing, even downright hilarious. So we see that your job title is a media director. What does that mean? Kind of, to use a churchy word, unpack that for us.
Oh yeah, I'll unpack that. I'll go through my journey and unpack that with you.
And you need three bullet points.
Please bless us with your unpacking of story.
Yes, the media is such a frustrating term because media only means what it means to us in the church world. That's it. Like, outside of church, media means something completely different. Media means, you know, like news and, you know,
television and
things
radio
like that. That's media. In the church world, for some reason, there's not a ton of media directors that are actually dealing with PR and stuff like that. In the church world, media means tech. So I am a tech director in a lot of ways. I mean, this is what we all go through whenever we try and sign up for one of those free industry magazines, and you have to check one of those boxes of, you know, what's your role at your church, and it always ends up being tech director. You know, that's essentially what we are.
Yeah, I've seen those.
What's hard is, you know, depending on the size of your church and staff, that can have a very different meaning. You know, if you're on staff and you're the tech director and it's just you, then you are a volunteer coordinator. You are possibly the front of house audio guy on Sundays. You are, managing assets. You're doing all kinds of crazy stuff because it's just you. The larger your staff gets, the more obviously that changes. And, you know, on a staff of my size, I don't do a lot when it comes down to hands-on. You're not going to find me.
You heard it here, folks.
I'm sure Mike do Smith, a lot. I'm what sure Mike Smith, he probably mentioned that at some point, that I don't do much.
I mean, that's why you weren't there that day.
That's true, because I wasn't doing anything. No, you reach a point where the things that you do are designed to empower everybody else on your team to do what they need to do. And so the bulk of my time is spent preparing or communicating or, you know, sadly being in meetings. But my goal is to set up everybody else on the team for success. And, you know, I run into a lot of guys who are, and ladies who are on smaller teams, you know, and they're kind of, they kind of have the, this despondent mindset of, yeah, but I have to actually run sound and I have to actually do these things. So I, how would I get to a place where I could be, you know, doing that with others? And it's a process. But one of the most difficult things for people who are technical people like we are, is to let go of something that you do really well. So like for me, it's lighting. I did lighting for so long and I love lighting. I still love lighting. I'm currently without an LD. And so I've actually, the past couple of weeks, I've spent more time on the board than I've spent on the board in many years. But when I got to the point where I realized, okay, me as a lighting person is not as valuable as me as a leader to empower other people to do this. Taking the pride out of it and saying, I'm going to let somebody else do this. Maybe they can't do it as well as I can, but we're still going to get it done. Or maybe, and even worse, they do it way better than I do. That's a difficult place to find yourself when you realize, wow, this person's better than I could ever be at this. So you just, it's a process of setting up people, whether that's volunteers or paid staff. You know, a lot of churches can't afford or are not going to put a whole lot of paid staff on the team. But that's one of the reasons why, you know, volunteer training is a huge passion of mine, because I believe and have proven that it's possible to empower volunteers to do pretty amazing things with technology. But it takes a lot of investment. And it takes you thinking outside of yourself to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot, where the bigger the team is and the bigger the focus is on leadership and expanding yourself, your skill set, and duplicating yourself can really make some incredible things happen. Like, we've run across some churches where almost the entire tech team, you know, besides maybe one person, is all volunteer. And it's very impressive and inspiring.
And I think one of the things you said about, you know, that fear of they may be better at this than I am, you also have to keep in mind, like, they are going to be handicapped to the point that you, you know, allow them to be great or stand behind them and encourage them, empower them. So, you know, as a leader's job is to humble yourself to realize, like, they can only be as great as I allow them to be, by supporting them and what they're doing.
Which is the excuse I use in every performance review with Toby. I'm like, Toby, I know you said I got to work on these things, but I just need you to, you know, lead me better and empower me to do those things better.
You're fired.
See, there we go. I got it. Okay, Brian. So something ended up on my podcast outline here that I have no idea what it means. I have on here to ask you about Cuban Pete, and I don't know what that means or who this Pete guy is.
Well, I think the more important question is who was it that brought this to your attention and decided that this would be worth bringing up in a podcast that other people would listen to?
Who do you think?
Was it Mike?
Drop the mic.
Mr. Man. Smith threw you under the bus, along with Cuban Pete, apparently.
Well, we all do things in college that we're not, you know, entirely proud of. I did performance, you know, all the way from when I was a kid, all the way through college. And when I was at Ouachita Baptist over in Arkansas, the great metropolis of Arkadelphia, I did a lot of performing in college, and we would have the Tiger Tunes event, which is kind of like Baylor's Sing. You know, it's when all the fraternities and sororities do their big musical numbers, and there were hosts and hostesses that would do stuff in between the acts. And so I was on the hosts and hostesses for a couple of years, and we did a montage of songs from The Mask. You'll remember The Mask.
Is that the Jim Carrey movie?
Yeah, the Jim Carrey.
Okay.
Jim Carrey movie. And one of the songs was Cuban Pete. And We had a thing happen where all of our costumes that were supposed to come did not happen. And we had to scrounge and find some costumes. And sadly, the costume for Cuban Pete ended up being in more spandex than I've ever worn before or ever will wear again.
Is there a photo of this?
Yes, please tell us there. Evidence.
Sadly, there's actual video of this. And thanks to my younger sister, Alicia, who we mentioned earlier, that exists on the World Wide Web. I won't tell you where, and y'all are welcome to go and dig for it.
Blake, you got to find it and put it in the show notes.
I've got my detective hat on.
This is what you're doing
thing,
for the next
it's
week.
It's a thing that happened. It's a thing that happened.
And would Mike Smith know where to find this?
I don't know. Mike Smith might be pretty hard to get a hold of after this.
He's going to die. He's going to take him. He's going to karate chop him and take him to that lake.
I'm going
to
take him fishing.
The director of
media
is going to delete his account.
Well, did that time on stage, you know, embarrassing yourself in spandex, did that give you a greater empathy as your tech director now?
For the worship
Absolutely.
Guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes me happy to be on the other side of the mic sometimes.
I mean, I don't know why your worship guys are wearing spandex on Sunday, but okay. So we like to end all of our episodes with a tech takeaway. You've been so full of wisdom, so that's tough to ask you to pull another rabbit out of your hat. But if you could give, this is essentially your one unique piece of advice. Everyone's got a thing in tech where they're like, man, ever since I started doing it this way, it's so much better. And the weirder or more random, the better. So essentially, what would be your tech takeaway on some advice you would give any church tech that they would, this would make their Sunday service better?
The biggest takeaway for me is, and I talk about this whenever I do, sessions on really anything, but especially volunteer training, is checklists. You know, as a technician, we typically have a lot of pride in knowing how to do what we do really well. But the reality is, if you're able to have a physical piece of paper with a pen or pencil that's got a checklist on it of the things that need to happen on, in our case, a Sunday morning, things go much more smoothly. You're going to ensure that you get all those little things done. You're going to have a lot more confidence that you haven't forgotten anything just because you haven't had your coffee yet or whatever it may be. And if something goes wrong, you're able to go to the powers that be and say, so actually we did everything we knew to do. This was a gear failure that we can't have any control over, or we actually found a new thing that we're going to add to the checklist that's going to ensure that this hopefully doesn't happen again. But whenever we do checklists, it's funny because people, like, you know, initially we just did it for our volunteers, which is a huge help for volunteers when, you know, you've trained them. They know how to do what you've taught them to do, but the first few times they do it, it's really scary because they're not used to doing it. When you've got that checklist next to them, all of a sudden their confidence level boosts way up and they feel good about the fact that I remember you told me how to do that. So I'll do that and check that off the list. But when you go to your sound guy who's been running sound for 30 years and you say, hey, here's a checklist I need to make sure that you check off each week, then you kind of get that sideways glance of who do you think I am? But even for those of us who've been doing this for a long time, having that checklist is a really, really beneficial thing. And, you know, it's doing your due diligence to make sure that everything gets executed properly.
Oh, I'm a big checklist. I'm a big fan of checklists. I mean, as you can tell with all the many bullet points on this outline, anytime I'll send Toby some notes or Toby will mark up a document and he'll go, do your bullet point thing. So I'll checklist it to death. Well, Brian, this is typically the point where I ask if you got any plugs, if you want anyone to find you anywhere, reach out. Although now I'm guessing you're wanting to run away so they don't find the spandex.
Or if you want to throw Mike Smith under the bus at this point.
One additional time.
Or a parent yearly.
No, I think that'll be more of a gradual drip campaign that I do with Mike.
Nice.
We'll make sure that gets taken care of well. No, you can find me. Worship Media Man is my handle pretty much everywhere. So Instagram, Facebook. I have a Twitter account. I just never deal with it. But yeah, Instagram especially. And another place that you can, if anybody is out there looking to get connected to a good network, I'm a part of the Metro Media Ministers Association. So you can Google that. And we're accepting new members all the time for that. So check that out as well. It's mainly for Southern Baptist churches, but feel free to reach out to us. And it's a great place to network with a lot of guys. We have an annual conference every July, and we've got media and communications folks from all over the country men and women, and various sizes of churches represented there. So that's a cool place to reach out to.
And you mentioned that Preston Wood's looking for a new lighting director. Is there a place where people can go to apply for Preston Wood jobs?
There is. You can go to prestonwood.org/jobs. And you can apply for, we have a lighting director position open. This is a fairly high level leadership position for us. We've got a couple of video editor positions open, and we're about to have some more positions created that will be open on our content team. So we are looking and need folks badly.
Oh, wow. Well, this is great. Well, then maybe some people will end up working at your staff because of this silly podcast. That's awesome.
I would love that.
Well, Brian, we really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Oh, I'm honored to be here. Thank you guys for asking me. This was a blast.
Thanks for listening. And hey, congratulations on surviving Sunday. If you happen to make it through next Sunday as well, join us again for your weekly tech breather.
Blake, I guess we know what you're going to be doing with the next week of your life. You're going to be searching the dark corners of the internet for that video of Cuban Pete and Brian Bailey.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna get me a Cuban sub. I'm gonna be dipping it in that Worcestershire sauce, and I'm gonna be eating it. I'm gonna be looking for that video. And you know, while I'm looking for that video, you should, dear listener yourself, take a video of your favorite part of the podcast and then just say, like, this was my favorite part. Like, you, like narrate it. Be like, this was my favorite part.
Is that like a selfie video?
It is a selfie video. Oh, my gosh. That's what we're going to call it. Take a selfie video. You heard it here first from Gen X Millennial Toby. And say why you like the podcast and tag us. And we'll reshare it.
Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church tier.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers, and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.